It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
And good Wednesday morning, everyone. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy Rios today. Sandy is off for meetings in Washington. That's part of the other hat that she wears here at American Family Association, representing us at meetings in Washington, D.C. They're going on today. Speaking of Washington, D.C. and meetings, tomorrow, May the 4th, is the National Day of Prayer. And so faith leaders from across the country have been invited to the White House, and that's pretty traditional. But the big news this morning, or at least rumored news this morning, is that President Donald Trump will use the occasion tomorrow for this meeting at the White House to sign an executive order on religious liberty. Now, you may remember back in February, there were leaks at that time that the order would come out, but that was all quashed. And what are we talking about when we talk about an executive order on religious liberty? Well, it's kind of goes along with some of the promises that were made during the election campaign. You know, and you're aware of stories that we have done over the last several years of Christians in businesses like the Kleins, the Bakers there in Oregon, who were taken to court because they refused to bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. They said that went against their religious beliefs to be involved in a homosexual wedding. And of course, we know that the state of Washington has gone after them and basically put them out of business. Baronelle Stutzman, the florist in Washington state, facing the similar thing. Homosexuals wanted her to provide flowers for a homosexual wedding, and she said no. She's in trouble with the state there over that. So that's what we're talking about, religious exemptions. Along with that, hospitals run by Christian organizations, they don't want to do abortions. They want exemptions from that sort of thing. So that's what we're talking about, an executive order on religious liberty. Now, when the draft of this was released back in February, it included broadly drawn language allowing, and here's a quote from the language back then, any organization, including closely held for-profit corporations, to protect religious freedom in a wide swath of circumstances, including when providing social services, education, or health care, earning a living, seeking a job, or employing others, receiving government grants or contracts, or otherwise participating in the marketplace, the public square, or interfacing with federal, state, or local governments. Now, that, of course, is written by all kinds of lawyers, but what does it mean? It means basically this, is that the state cannot express prejudice against you if you have beliefs, you're a Christian organization, you're a Christian business like Hobby Lobby, or you're a nonprofit organization that wants to get involved with helping others, but there are federal grants involved, and so that the state cannot prejudice against you because you hold these religious beliefs, because you may be against abortion. You may hold biblical beliefs when it comes to homosexuality. And right now, the way it stands and the way Christians, quite frankly, are being persecuted in this country because of those basic religious beliefs, you know, beliefs that have been in place for a long, long time, folks. But certainly during the past administration of President Barack Obama, Christians started to face that kind of persecution. They were taken to court and, you know, the left wing demanding that they go along with that leftist agenda. and that if they didn't go along, they would be punished by the courts, as the case of the Kleins that we've talked about so many times, or that you're not going to get that government grant because you have stated beliefs, stated biblically based beliefs. Well, the rumor is that the lawyers at the White House have been working on language. Now, the other report is that the effort, and basically driven by Vice President Mike Pence, that the effort back in February was quashed because Ivanka Trump, president's daughter, and her husband Jared Kushner are more liberal in their beliefs, and they have projected themselves as friendly to the homosexual community. So the rumor is they put a stop to it at this time. However, we're aware of what has happened over the last several days. Conservatives, pro-family people, very upset. They believe the Republicans put up the white flag on this budget it'll be voted on today. But that Republicans, they say, put up the white flag. Remember, one of the promises from President Trump was to defund Planned Parenthood. Well, this budget that Democrats and Republicans have agreed on continues funding for Planned Parenthood, contains no money for the wall. Major promises made by President Trump. So there's been quite a backlash in the conservative community over that. And some are saying that President Trump is under some pressure now to come up with something that conservatives can celebrate, something that they can say, hey, listen, you promised this, President Trump, during your election campaign, and now we want you to deliver. So we will see what happens. As I say, the reports this morning, both in Politico and also U.S. News, are reporting this, that there's going to be some kind of announcement, executive order, on religious liberty while these faith leaders are at the White House tomorrow. Now, I assume there is some credence to this because before I left the office yesterday afternoon, I got this press release from the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. They issued the following statement in response to reports that the president will sign this executive order that creates religious exemptions which open the door, they say, to discrimination. All right? This is a quote from that press release from the ACLU. The ACLU fights every day to defend religious freedom, but religious freedom does not mean the right to discriminate against or harm others. If President Trump signs an executive order that attempts to provide a license to discriminate against women or LGBT people, we will see him in court. So there's the threat already. They're taking their position already based on these reports that the president may sign this executive order on religious freedom tomorrow. So we'll have to wait and see on that. We'll certainly keep an eye on this. But remember, this is one of the things that many, many millions of conservatives voted in favor of Donald Trump. These are some of the major issues that conservatives have been concerned about and Christians over the last several years, that the freedoms of Christians to operate a Christian business according to Christian principles. And remember, folks, let's be very clear, and we have to remind you, in the Kleins case, it wasn't a case of them refusing to sell a dozen brownies to homosexuals. Never. In fact, you know, they were aware that they had homosexual customers. We'll sell you a loaf of bread. We'll sell you a cake. The issue came when they were asked by this homosexual couple to bake a cake for their homosexual wedding. And the client says, we just can't participate in something that we believe as Christians, as Bible-believing Christians, that homosexuality is described as a sin. We do not want to be involved with that. So that's what we're talking about here. Likewise, for a hospital that is run according to Christian principles, opposed to abortion, they should not be forced to do so. Also, certainly in the Hobby Lobby case, we've already seen that case go to court where the left wanted them to provide abortifacients to their employees. I'm not sure there wasn't even a demand from their employees for that kind of thing. But this is the kind of thing that we're talking about. Christians were very concerned about that. There was a promise that that there would be exemptions put in place for Christians. So we'll have to wait and see. As I say, this has been driven by Vice President Mike Pence, who faced national backlash when he was governor of Indiana and tried to bring this in, and he had to back away from it. So we will see what will happen. Now, the other news happening this morning, folks, that we need to talk about is that the efforts, the second wave of efforts, we'll put it this way, by the Republicans to replace Obamacare is once again in trouble. You remember back, I guess it was about a month or so ago, that there were plans for a vote on a replacement for Obamacare, but they failed. The Republicans failed to get enough support, so the vote was pulled at the very last moment. There have been a lot of meetings going on behind the scene, and there have been reports and confirmations over the last several days that so-called Freedom Caucus, the kind of inherited Tea Party people who were opposed to the original version that was being put forward by the Republican leadership to replace Obamacare, they didn't like it. They said it really doesn't replace and repeal Obamacare as the Republicans promised during the election campaign. And so they've been working on another compromise. One of the major compromises has been, and most of the Freedom Caucus is now on board with voting with this latest version, is that states would be given waivers to back away from language in this bill that says that provision has to be made for people with pre-existing conditions. You know that that has driven up premiums in the Obamacare exchanges. So there is a provision in this new language that says states will have waivers. Well, some Republicans are not happy with that, and they have become very outspoken about that issue of pre-existing conditions. They say they will not support it. So the word this morning basically is this, in the Wall Street Journal and also Politico, is that there are at least 21 Republicans in the House that say they will not vote on this unless more language is changed. They are concerned. One of the things they're concerned about is this issue of pre-existing conditions, that people who have been diagnosed with cancer, multiple sclerosis, or those kinds of conditions, that they be protected under this new health care bill that the Republicans bring forward. They're saying now there's at least 21 that say they want stronger language on this issue. And this morning, there's a possibility of a few more Republicans who say they won't go along. And so if it gets up 22 or above, that means, assuming, and I think we can safely assume, the Democrats are not going to support any bill that the Republicans put forward, then we would be in a situation, once again, where the Republicans would likely say, we're not even going to vote on this because we don't have enough support. So apparently last night, Republican leadership went to work once again, and they're trying to come up with language. Apparently the president was on the phone trying to arm twist a few more of these moderate Republicans that they should come together and sign this. We will have to wait and see. There'll be much more on this today. You're listening to Sandy Rios in the morning. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about the unrest on our college campuses. We'll be right back.
Eight Days of Hope 13 is headed to Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. Hi, I'm Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope is a faith-based ministry. We've gone all over the country to help families rebuild after natural disasters. We've helped almost 1,800 families rebuild their homes, sometimes from the ground up. Lafayette, Louisiana, and the whole state of Louisiana got hit by epic flooding last year in August. Almost 25 inches of rain fell, and almost $20 billion of damage was done. Literally 140,000 homes flooded. Think about that, 140,000 families waiting for somebody to be a glimpse of Jesus. You can be a skilled professional, or you can be somebody like me who's less skilled but wants to give back. Go to 8daysofhope.com. We provide the food and lodging, and you can learn a lot more about the ministry. And we can't wait to see you in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 4th to June 11th. For more information, go to 8daysofhope.com.
Coming up, my mentor and an example for thousands of Christian educators.
Welcome to Tips with youth educator Dr. Bill Ziegler.
Over the past 15 years, I have had the honor of knowing and being mentored by Finn Larson, the Executive Director of Christian Educators. During his time, Finn has transformed Christian Educators into a vibrant and thriving association serving thousands of Christian educators throughout the United States. We would like to thank him for his sacrifice, dedication, and leadership to the association. And we look forward to the smooth transition of leadership where David Schmoos will take over as executive director this coming summer.
Information about the Christian Educators Association is available at 4tips.org. That's the number 4, T-I-P-P-S.org. TIPS is an outreach of the Christian Educators Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's a new commandment for Catholics, thou shalt not eat tagalongs. The Archdiocese of Kansas City announces they will sever ties with the Girl Scouts. That means no more Girl Scout cookies, no Thin Mints, no Do-Si-Dos. The Archdiocese says Girl Scouts is no longer a compatible partner when it comes to issues like virtue and values. In recent days, Girl Scouts has opened its ranks to little boys who identify as little girls. And the organization's position on abortion and contraception has caused great angst among the faithful. So the Archdiocese is dumping Girl Scouts in favor of American Heritage Girls, a pro-life, Christian-based scouting program. American Heritage Girls has more than 47,000 members, growing rapidly, even though they do not sell tagalongs. But that's okay, because many parents say the Girl Scouts' liberal agenda has caused them to toss their cookies. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. If you're a supporter of Israel, as many of us are, there was an important gathering in the last 24 hours at the White House, those supporters, to celebrate, really, the independence of Israel, the anniversary of the independence of Israel. And Vice President Mike Pence addressed that group and outlined and reminded people of the promises that President Trump made during the election campaign. So let's have a listen to what Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, had to say to that gathering of Israeli supporters at the White House.
Under President Donald Trump, let me assure you of this. If the world knows nothing else, the world will know this. America stands with Israel. So let me say with confidence to all who are gathered here, President Trump stands without apology for Israel, and he always will. And the President of the United States, as we speak, is giving serious consideration to moving the American Embassy in Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And to be clear, the President is also personally committed to resolving the Israeli and Palestinian conflict. Even now, we're making valuable progress toward the noble goal of peace. Thanks to the President's tireless leadership, momentum is building and goodwill is growing. And that while there will undoubtedly have to be compromises, you can rest assured, President Donald Trump will never compromise the safety and security of the Jewish state of Israel, not now, not ever. Know today that our prayers for the safety of the people of Israel each and every day go from the hearts of the American people to heaven. And know that Israel does not stand alone. Today, under President Donald Trump, America's support for Israel's security is at record levels. And in President Trump, America has a leader who will call our enemies by their name.
All right, there you have it. Certainly, Vice President Pence getting lots of applause for his comments, reiterating the president's support for Israel. And the one thing that kind of checked me on that when I heard that speech from the vice president yesterday was that the president is giving serious consideration of moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, that's not what he said during the election campaign. He said he would do it. Now, we're just going to have to keep the president's feet to the fire on this one, folks. Presidents have promised this over the years. Presidential candidates have promised this over the years. And, of course, we know it has never happened. And now we know, I believe, President Trump is under pressure from inside his own administration, that you better not do this. It'll make the Palestinians upset, and we can't have that. So we're going to have to. But those few words yesterday from Vice President Pence, that serious consideration, that was a whole lot different than what President Trump said during the election campaign. All right. If you've been listening to our newscasts and reading One News Now, over the last several years, and certainly in recent days, you are aware of the unrest on university campuses across this country, particularly when it comes to conservatives just being invited to speak by some conservative groups on campuses. Just think of the Ann Coulter incident in Berkeley. And it is happening across the country in university campuses. Basically, the sign has gone up, conservatives not welcome. Even Christian students on campuses basically being persecuted and shut out because of their beliefs. Well, it's not only students that have faced persecution, folks, on campuses. Stories that you may have not heard are Christian professors on college campuses across this country. And one of those who has faced a lot of persecution in recent years is Dr. Carol Swain from Vanderbilt University. She is a political scientist, professor of political science and law at Vanderbilt University, and it is our great honor to welcome her to our show this morning. Good morning, Dr. Swain.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Great to have you with us. We've chatted a couple of times over the years, and you know, for folks, Dr. Swain, who may not be familiar with you, and I want to get into the meat of why we're having you on today. But tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, you have been to Princeton. You are at Yale School. I mean, you talk about Ivy League. But you had a rough road to get there. You earned your way there. No one gave you that on a silver platter. And I think it goes to the character that you've demonstrated. Tell us a little bit about your early years.
Well, I was one of 12 children born and raised in the rural poverty of Bedford, Virginia, and we all dropped out of school. I married at 16, had my first child at 17, and I later earned a high school equivalency, went to a community college and got the first of five college and university degrees. I graduated with honors with my four-year degree from Roanoke College in Salem, Virginia. Went to Virginia Tech, got an additional degree, then the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill for a PhD, and then later I went to Yale University to get an additional degree, a master's in law, and I've taught for 27 years, about 10 at Princeton and 17 at Vanderbilt. So my background is totally non-traditional, and I'm a first-generation college student.
Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. When I read your biography, it is absolutely incredible. You're an African-American woman. You would think with that incredible education background, you're an African-American woman, that you would be a poster person for a secular university at Vanderbilt University. But something has happened that people need to be aware of. You did some things that upset some people at Vanderbilt. Talk to us about that.
Well, first of all, I can say that my background doesn't fit the narrative that the political left would like to say about race and opportunity in America.
Mm.
So the fact that I overcame poverty and I achieved the American dream has never been a story that's interested many people because it runs counter to the narrative. And at Vanderbilt, you know, I've been very successful. I didn't just get into those universities. I won national prizes. I've been cited by the U.S. Supreme Court. And I've made an impact in the world through my research, but I ran afoul of the university and the political correctness crowd nationally when I published an opinion piece January 2015 that criticized Islam. And that a protest, harassment ensued. A few months later, there was a petition. This time it was Muslims and LGBT people and others. They wanted me to be forced to go through sensitivity training because I was publicly embarrassing the university by calling myself a professor, because I was a Christian and I might discriminate against non-Christians, and because I hated Muslims. So those were the allegations. And, of course, university could not force me as a tenured professor to undergo sensitivity training, nor did they try. And I laughed at the very idea that sensitivity training was supposed to make me so sensitive that I would stop speaking my mind. And eventually, later this year, earlier this year, I decided I would take an early retirement, not because they pushed me out, but because I think it's more important for me to be able to travel and to reach a wider audience through public speaking and through my writing.
You know, I was reading a story about your resignation. It was in the Tennessean back in January of this year. And in announcing your retirement, a quote, you were saying that you would continue to write and speak publicly, and you said you would miss the students and the rhythm of campus. But then you went on to say this, "But I will not miss what American universities have allowed themselves to become." Can you expand on that for us, please?
Well, to be the universities, for the most part, have just abandoned the whole idea of being a marketplace of ideas, where you would have opposing views and debates and clashes that would be settled in a debate-like environment where opposing sides came together, people listened, and the person with the best arguments and the best data and ideas, you know, would be the more persuasive. And people would leave the debate forum, you know, probably thinking differently when they entered because they would have heard more sides. I think the universities today have a viewpoint, and they're very much into indoctrination. And when students arrive, they teach them what to think, not how to think critically.
So where did this start? I mean, some people say, you know, it started back in the 60s, the protests against the Vietnam War, et cetera, et cetera. But I went to universities during the 70s, and diverse opinions were still welcomed in most campuses. But something has happened that basically says now that we don't want conservative opinion even expressed. I saw an interview this week on Tucker Carlson's show on Fox News with a professor, I think, from Colby College up in Maine. His name is Aaron Hanlon, and he says universities have the right to decide about what quality speakers should be allowed on our campuses. And I mean, when I'm hearing this kind of thing, these are public universities with taxpayers' dollars, and they're saying, we're going to decide what constitutes quality now. And it's almost...
They're actually...
Yeah, go ahead.
they have actually said that people have made statements, I believe in free speech as long as the free speech isn't offensive. I believe in the First Amendment, but that doesn't mean anyone can say anything they want to say. So at the universities, they're qualified for tests as free speech. When you ask me what the roots are, I would say the roots of what's taking place. It goes back to Karl Marx and the Communist Manifesto. And if you study what has happened over the decades, when the economic revolution that Karl Marx predicted did not take place, later scholars decided that the reason it failed was because of Western civilization's Judeo-Christian ties, and to change the Western world to bring about the utopia, you had to change the hearts and minds of people. So they decided to attack the culture. And so political correctness is one of the fruits of critical theory and cultural Marxism. And in the 1960s, there was this theorist named Herbert Marcuse. And Herbert Marcuse came up with the idea of repressive tolerance. And repressive tolerance meant that they would shut down the views and be intolerant towards views that did not fit their agenda, but they would allow tolerance for groups that had been marginalized. And they felt that the people in power, the whole idea of free speech worked for those that already had power. And so that the only way you would change the society would be to shut up those people and allow the marginalized groups to speak. And so Angela Davis, the radical of the 1960s that was involved, you know, with police shootings and with revolution, she was one of his students. And Saul Alinsky came along during the early 1970s. And so it's the combination of Herbert Marcuse, Saul Alinsky, and cultural Marxism. We see the fruits of that on university campuses.
What role did President Barack Obama play, do you believe, in enhancing this movement on our university campuses today?
Well, I would say that President Obama and many of the people who are leading colleges and universities were the radicals, you know, of the 1960s, 1970s, and they certainly played a key role because they were Marxists. And I would say that President Obama was very much steeped in Saul Alinsky's tactics. Saul Alinsky was a Marxist. And so once the president was elected, their whole agenda, which included pushing LGBT, pushing Islam, shutting down Christianity, that we're seeing the fruits of that.
Mm.
But it goes back to Karl Marx, his later later scholars that looked at his revolution that didn't occur, they applied it to the culture, they began to change the language, and they developed this whole idea of cultural Marxism, where you change the hearts and minds of the people, you start with the children, and a lot of the sex education, all of that comes directly from Herbert Marcuse. And I'm talking about the sex education where you would normalize things that we would, in earlier generations, consider perversion.
Okay. Dr. Swain, we only have about a minute left or less. Very quickly, what would you say to parents this morning that are getting set to send their kids off to one of these universities? What's your advice?
Well, I have a new book called Abduction, How Liberalism Steals the Hearts and Minds of Our Children, and it exposes what's taking place in public and private schools, at universities, as well as through the entertainment industry. So I would encourage them to get a copy of Abduction, How Liberalism Steals the Hearts and Minds of Our Children.
Okay.
They can learn more from my website, carolinswain.net and bethepeopletv.com.
Okay.
And follow me on Facebook.
All right, Dr. Carol Swain, thank you so much for joining us this morning. And our prayers were with you on your new mission as you leave Vanderbilt, but go out and really educate people about what's going on in our country. Dr. Swain, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Listen to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Much more ahead. 888-589-8840. Your thoughts on this when we come back.
Weep no more. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Following an attack by militant Muslims, Pastor Paul Sinaraj of Bibles for Mideast, an evangelistic and church planting ministry in the Middle East and North Africa, sought refuge in a forest home to recover from severe injuries. While recovering, the militants, armed with steel bars and other weapons, found Pastor Paul and his missionary friends. They all thought they were going to die. Then, out of the forest, emerged three lions who attacked the militants and scattered them. God still does miracles.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. American Family Radio invites you to join us Thursday evening for the 6th annual One Cry Prayer Summit. Join hearts with believers from across America as we cry out to God for a spiritual awakening. This year's theme is connecting the body of Christ from coast to coast. There'll be live worship with Freddie Washington, and a studio panel will share biblical insight regarding prayer. It's a two-hour concert of prayer, Thursday night starting at 7 Central on the National Day of Prayer.
My name is Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President here at American Family Association. I want to take just a moment to say thank you. Thank you for those 1.5 million of you who have signed the petition to boycott the Target Corporation. We believe that together and with God's help, eventually we'll see a new direction for Target.
Visit afa.net/target.
Choosing silence can make it almost impossible for you to approach God after abortion. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart Today. Carrie was a young mom overwhelmed by the demands of her two young sons. When she found herself pregnant again, Carrie chose abortion, thinking it would relieve the pressure and help her be a better mom. She also chose to keep it secret, fearing judgment from her church and other family members. In the aftermath, Carrie had a hunger and thirst to be made right with God. And soon the safety of silence became a prison for locking away the pain. Yet Carrie has learned that even though a wall of silence shrouds our hearts, leaving us feeling isolated and alone, the love of Jesus Christ can free us to live another way. You'll find a network of organizations offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at CradleMyHeart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Americans are shocked by the recent arrest of three individuals in Michigan for acts of unimaginable barbarism involving the mutilation of two little girls from Minnesota. Tragically, this crime is surely but the tip of a huge iceberg. One alleged perpetrator reportedly is suspected of doing this for 12 years, possibly subjecting hundreds, if not thousands, of other girls to what is called female genital mutilation, or FGM. 500,000 more may risk having it done to them. Such horrifying statistics are plausible because Islamic supremacists believe that FGM is permitted and condoned, if not actually obligatory, under their brutally repressive Sharia doctrine. They say they're guided by the life and sayings of the perfect model Muslim, the Prophet Muhammad. And most alarming of all, like so many other aspects of Sharia, this one is happening here. That must end. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And welcome back once again to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy today. 888-589-8840 is the number to call. 888-589-8840. You heard the challenge from Dr. Swain there a moment ago about what you need to do with regards to the climate on our universities today. Just a terrific interview with Dr. Swain, just an incredible lady. She's retiring early from Vanderbilt University, where she has been persecuted for her beliefs. She dared to speak out against radical Islam. She has spoken out, even as an African-American woman, against Black Lives Matter. And for that, she was nothing short but persecuted at Vanderbilt. But thank God, she's a very brave lady, a gutsy lady, and never backed down. And now, just towards the end of the interview, she mentioned about a book that parents, you parents have to read. You really do. and it's called Abduction: How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. And she made it very clear, in particular universities, but I believe it's starting in our public school systems as well today. It is driven by a Marxist ideology that is very hostile to Christianity, that sees Christianity, Western Christianity, has an interference in a plan to bring Marxism to our country. Once again, Abduction: How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. And you can go to her website, carolmswain.net. carolmswain.net. Probably it is on Amazon as well. Abduction: How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Minds. And folks, now if you listen to American Family Radio and you read onenewsnow.com, you're well up on this. You understand what's going on out there. But folks, you need to be aware. You're getting set to send little Johnny or Jane off to university this fall. You need to be aware of what's happening on our campuses today. Now, you may have graduated from a particular university and you just feel an obligation to send your kid there. Well, you know, the other factor in all of this is our own Dan Celia reminds us often, how do we spend our money? How do we spend the money that God has given us? Should you really be spending it on sending $100,000, $120,000 or more on a university that's going to try to destroy what you have taught your kid as Christian moms and dads? 888-589-8840 is the number to call. And we're also been talking about the latest news on the health care bill that the Republicans are trying to reintroduce with some modifications to keep some elements of the Republican Party happy, but that still is not working. Apparently the moderates and those, yes, on the left in the Republican Party still don't like it. So you're going to get more on that today. All right, let's go to our phones to Shirley in Tennessee. Good morning, Shirley. Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Good morning. I thank you so much for taking my call. I believe that we need to support our Christian universities and colleges and start sending our children there, do some online classes. It's time to pull them out. And also, each time I hear about the things that Trumps are pushing and Pence and all of them, it reminds me of what my aunt said before she passed in August. She had a dream that if Trump had made it into presidency and she passed before we could ever get to the voting stage, that there would be a lot of small wars, and then people would get so frustrated with him that they would ask the UN for help, which would be a big mistake. And then she said that at that point, my dream came in that I had, that he, because we're trying to get him out of the presidency for a second term, he would never make it because we're trying to get people to vote against him, that he would drop the economy and they would issue in all of these mark of the beast microchips, et cetera. It's a weird, crazy scenario that hit my mind, and I was like, well, even though I supported Trump, I'm very disappointed. And Ted Cruz said we would be.
I know, so, I know, Shirley. I think a lot of people are disappointed, and you know, they want the Republicans to stand up to the Democrats. Some people are saying the Republicans have to start behaving like the Democrats would. If the Democrats were in control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, they would not be putting up with what the Democrats have been doing to the Republicans. They would take a stand, and one thing they'd get rid of is the filibuster rule. They can do that, and they're going to have to do that if they're going to get anything past what they promised the American people that they would do, i.e. a wall, i.e. repeal and replace Obamacare. If they think they're ever going to get enough Democrats on their side to do those things, think again. I mean, this budget that the Republicans and Democrats just agreed to last weekend proves that point. There is a reason why Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi were out celebrating on Sunday night. They got everything they wanted, and Republicans got almost nothing out of the deal. All right, back to our phones. Let's go to Todd in Louisiana. Todd, good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Fred. I would like to talk about religious liberty, and this is a big problem, and I'm going to tell you why. in 1970s, I guess it was the early 70s, when they took the Bibles out of school, when they separated church from state, it really caused a division. Because now, if you take Bibles out of school, something else is teaching. So you see, they separated God and man.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and it also goes to the family, too. When you keep the family, you know, together, you know, the man is the head of the house. When you take the man out of the house, something else is going to take his place. And this evil that's in this world is because the family hasn't been taught the truth. Mm-hmm. And when you take the Bible away from people, what else is going to take its place? And this is the problem we have.
Yeah, Todd, you're exactly right. We have bowed the knee to secular humanism and man's thinking, and we've thrown God aside. And, you know, I've often heard it said that God is the gentleman. He will leave when he's told he's not welcome. And I think we have seen that in our schools. They want nothing to do with the Ten Commandments. There was that Kentucky case back several years ago that went to the Supreme Court with regards to the Ten Commandments. Remember what one of the justices said in that case? My goodness, we can't have the Ten Commandments because kids might feel they have to obey them. And we all know what has happened in our schools, the violence that we have seen and the hostility towards anything biblical in our schools and now in our universities. 888-589-8840. Let's go back to our phones and let's head to Alabama this morning. Mrs. Madison's on the line. Go ahead, Mrs. Madison.
Yeah, hey, good morning, sir. My thought is that as I was listening to Dr. Swain, I was thinking back when I was a child in elementary school and junior high then and then high school. Most all the time we had 5 and 6 books of homework every night, Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was thinking, the children, I don't even see them bringing any books home anymore to study.
Mm.
I have children in elementary that are, my grandchildren are close to me, and they never have any books. They have, like, worksheets they bring home. So I was just thinking maybe they've removed the homework so the parents can't see the textbooks to know what's in them, to know what their children are learning actually in school other than the basics.
That's a great point to be made that, you know, parents have a responsibility to find out what their kids are being instructed, what kinds of instruction they're getting at schools. Because if your kid is being taught that, for example, evolution is a fact, it is not. It is a theory. And, of course, many, many, even Christians, teachers in our schools today are intimidated by the fact that they believe they can't even mention creation as an opposing view to evolution. But also, just the propaganda that's going on in our schools today. We had a story over the last couple of days of a student at Northern Arizona University where he was reading the Bible prior to class beginning. And his professor went ballistic, said he couldn't have the Bible on his desk. Now, he's reading it. He puts it away when class is beginning. He puts it away. It's not interfering with class. But she went ballistic over the fact that he even had a Bible on his desk. There is outright hatred for Christianity in our school system, our university system today, folks. And it's licensed. You're allowed to, as we talked to Dr. Swain there, you're allowed to persecute Christians today on our campuses, whether it's on the pro-life issue, whether it's on the issue of what you believe with regards to biblical truth when it comes to homosexuality, whatever the case may be. You're being persecuted on our campuses today. You need to be aware of that, Mom and Dad, and that's the point we're trying to make. Once again, Carol Swain's book, Dr. Carol Swain's book, Abduction, How Liberalism Steals Our Children's Hearts and Steals Our Kids' Minds. CarolMSwain.net. You can go there and find it. And as I say, I'm sure you can find it on Amazon. Need to get that book, folks. Educate yourself on what's happening in our school system today. Carlos in Virginia, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Carlos. You need to turn down your radio, Carlos.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. I just wanted to speak to some points about President Donald Trump. First of all, I just don't feel like, you know, I'm not losing hope in the things that Trump has built. One, that he's done a lot in the first 100 days. But also, I just realized, I just want to bring to attention that he's really got a quite a battle on his hands, because the establishment not only is battling him from the left, but also from the right. Mm-hmm. And that though they may appear to be Republicans and try to ride on the ticket, a lot of them are these neocons who have their own agenda. And a lot of times it's very similar to what we see on the left.
No, that's very true. And it's really interesting. There is a story. Thanks, Carlos, for that. There's a story in Politico that came out last night. Very interesting. You may remember that President Trump tweeted out yesterday morning that basically come September, things will be different. He talked about a government shutdown. Let's go ahead if that's what it takes to change things in Washington. Get rid of the filibuster. Well, listen to this. Some key Republican senators basically said, that's not going to happen, and we have to educate President Trump on this. The political story quotes Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana. I'm not going to support a change in rules. He says it's worked for centuries. It can still work. We don't have a rule problem. We've got a people problem. And then you have Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. He and I differ on that, because without the filibuster, this country would have been gone a long time ago. I'm going to talk to him about it. I'll get him back online. This is Republican Senator Orrin Hatch. We love the filibuster. Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. I don't think the American people elected President Trump and Republican majorities in both houses to shut down the government. I think they expected us to govern. And that's what we're doing. Really. So I guess, Senator Cornyn, you're happy with this budget that came out the other day that doesn't have any money for the wall, continues funding Planned Parenthood. You see, these Republicans actually believe, and maybe it's because they've been in Washington for so long, they're just going to go and have coffee and have lunch with their Democratic friends and will come up with a compromise. Well, I'll tell you, folks, those who supported President Trump in the last election, not interested in compromise anymore, because you know what? When compromise happens, conservatives lose every time. And that is not why the Republicans were put in place in this last election. But when you have this problem within the Republican Party, that's a recipe for disaster. Fred Jackson sitting in for Sandy Rios today. Sandy's in Washington today for meetings. But Lord willing, we'll be back here again tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us. Stay tuned here to American Family Radio. Much more great programming. And Lord willing, we'll see you again real soon. Bye for now.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.